your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments, really focused on resources and investing in the resource sector. We are going to switch to a bit more broad topics in this segment as we are chatting with Axel Merk, President and Chief Investment Officer over at Merk Investments. Now, Axel, I go to you regularly for a lot of comments on a wide range of markets, but also a lot focused on currencies. And that's where I want to start here with, especially the US dollar. It's been a real up and down year to date so far for the dollar. The US dollar on the dollar index started off the year in the low 89 region, ran up through the tail end of March up to about 93.50, and then dropped really quickly back down to that 89 region, and has since that time in, let's say, June, continued to trend higher, and most recently touched a high of right around 94.50. Now, tail end of this week, we have seen the dollar pull back as we're recording this, more around that 94 region. Axel, give us your general thoughts on where you see the dollar going from here and what you think the key catalysts are driving the dollar forward, please.
Well, great to be with you. Well, in the short term, it's speculators. And as we're talking, we don't have the most recent report available from this week yet, but the speculative positions on the long side were very high. And I think that is part of the reason why the dollar made it over 94. On the broader scope of things, I am in the reflationary camp. Now, obviously, reflation hasn't worked so great because lots of countries are sputtering, supply chains are disrupted and whatnot, but people are trying to reflate. And as they will eventually succeed with that, it means that the rest of the world that's gradually opening up will borrow U.S. dollars to, like, that's what it is when they take out loans, dollar-denominated loans, which is a short on the dollar. And so as the deflation is stepping in, that means the dollar should weaken over time. Now, obviously, that also makes it more vulnerable to these risk-off environments. When the risk asset, meaning the S&P 500, drops down, then there might be a flight to the dollar as people delever, they have to reduce then those dollar shorts. So for the time being, the speculators drove up the dollar. But I do think the dollar will weaken in the medium term.
Yeah, Axel, I was going to ask you about that. It's a strange environment to see inflation in a lot of the commodities and agricultural products, in a lot of household appliances, and also in wages. And that's all kind of pushing the reflation-inflation narrative. But at the same time, there are those market skitters and jitters about the Fed tapering and what that will mean. And there's some projections of a slowdown in growth and GDP moving forward. So you would think that that we would have a weaker dollar with all this inflation, but instead we've seen a flight to safety in the dollar, which has pushed it higher. Could we actually be entering that stagflationary period similar to the 70s? We see a lot of articles out that on that topic where we have slowing growth with inflation. Could that be why things have been in this weird limbo?
Well, sure, but let me first make a comment on higher inflation. Historically, when inflation picks up, the currency of a country often strengthens. And that may sound odd, but that happens because the market believes that dear central bankers are going to do the right thing and hike rates prudently so that no inflation is going to be a problem in the long term. It's that only after a while that people realize, oh my God, these guys are not serious about being tough, that then the currency weakens. And so that's why in the short term, you have these confusing signals. Now, you're referring to stagflation. Well, stagflation happens in an environment where, for example, commodity prices are high, but you cannot have actual real good growth. And that's exactly what happens when you shut down part of the economy and then trying with full throttle to move things forward. And the headwinds. Like, one of the reasons why we have a headwind is because people bought all the gadgets they possibly could during the pandemic, and so they have overconsumed in some ways. Some of the fiscal stimulus is abating. The unemployment benefits are running out. On the infrastructure bill and so forth, I expect that to be somewhat neutral. It's not going to be as grand as the Democrats had hoped, but it's not going to be the same sort of drag we had in 2008. I think the key thing here to remember is this environment is different from 2008 or post 2008, both on the supply and the demand side. On the demand side, you don't have the fiscal drag, and on the supply side, we're throttling things down. So it's a very different environment, and the inflationary pressures can unfold in that. And yes, stagflation is a real risk, and you see that by people, including us now, more talking about it.
So some of the short-term moves, too, in the dollar, going back to September, the dollar moved up for pretty much five straight weeks. And this week, again, we haven't closed the markets, but the dollar looks to be closing flat, potentially down. So that run could end. A lot of that run, though, could be predicated on at least the Fed talking a bit more dovishly. Again, they haven't started to unwind the QE program. They haven't gone through any rate hikes, but the market is starting to price in some rate hikes and a general unwind. That could very well be what pushed the dollar. What do you think about the Fed's policy moving forward here, Axel? Are we going to get an unwind? Are we going to get a rate hike? I know the rate hike's a year plus out, but how critical is that to assess and understand?
Well, a few things. First, the Fed has been very consistent in saying they want to finish the taper next summer. Everybody is saying, oh, are they going to stop tapering now, next month, a month later? Well, if they want to finish it next summer, they better get going with it. And historically, the Fed is always, not always, but usually slower than the market is pricing in. And so after the financial crisis, it took years before we went off the zero ground. Now, you and I may think, well, it's about time. I mean, it's one thing to be tightening. It's another to go into neutral. The Fed has all but promised not to even to go into neutral, but to stay just about full throttle until we have this so-called maximum employment, and maximum employment has been morphing into getting just about everybody off the sidelines. And so if they stick to that, then no, they're not going to hike. But if at the same time this transitory thing is suddenly not so transitory anymore in the eyes of the Fed, then of course they can act sooner. But keep in mind that part of the reason the Fed is doing this walk where saying, hey, we're not going to do anything, is they don't want the taper tantrum. And if they say, hey, we're going to hike early, then they're going to get a taper tantrum because it means the bond market will reprice things. If the bond market reprices things, all hell can break loose in other markets. And Powell is petrified about that. And so I think we're going to get a little more talk. Oh, my God, yeah, maybe inflation lasts a little bit longer, but trust us, everything will be fine. And so they're not going to hike rates. Now, obviously, there's the chance that Powell is not going to be Fetch you anymore come early next year, but any replacement that's in consideration, I don't think it's going to have a dramatically different policy either.
What about other central banks too? You paying attention to any of their comments? And quite frankly, some of the smaller central banks have started going through unwind and even rate hikes. Do you think that plays any role in the markets or in currencies?
Well, yeah, as we talk, Singapore just hiked rates, so that was refreshing. So we do have, and then in Southeast Asia, some are considering to hike rates. There's talk about the UK hiking rates. Well, the good news is we're going to have a greater dispersion, and that makes market. When everybody's at zero, and it's very, very difficult to discern of, I mean, we can say, oh, these are the good guys, these are the bad guys, but no, having some differentiation is going to be very, very healthy. To allow also to for capital to be allocated more according to some things that might make more sense. If everybody just goes full throttle, putting foam on the street so that everything is well greased, that's a very unhealthy environment we've had for a long time. And so, yes, the big boys, they don't want to do much, but some of the smaller players are starting to say, yes, we will hike. Now, that said, also as we speak, the Bank of Japan has come out, hey, all these guys talk about tapering and maybe hiking, that's not us. So Japan, and by the way, the yen being obviously one of the weaker currencies that's glued to the zero bound here, Japan is not likely going to be one of those that's going to start hiking. But I'm not telling you anything you don't know, I don't think.
Well, Axel, just shifting over from the currencies and the fiat money over to sound money and hard money, the precious metals, one would have thought that the precious metals would have fared a little bit better considering all the reports coming back on the rising inflation. But then again, it did have a big run in 2019, 2020, up to its all-time high of 2089, and then gold has pulled back for the last year and a half. We've seen a little bounce recently and a little bit of divergence from the general markets over the last couple of weeks. Do you think this recent bounce is the beginning of a new uptrend, or what would it take to get a more sustained rally in the precious metals?
Well, we look at the price of gold relative to real interest rates, but not looking so much at the current CPI, but more what's priced in 10-year rates, the TIPS yield, the inflation-protected securities yield, for example. And that's, as we speak, at about minus 1%. It was as low as minus 1.2%. So it has come up in recent months a little bit, and that may well have been part of the reason why the price of gold was kind of more range-bound. And as you point out, it had a major run-up last year. And now it really depends on what one thinks about what's going to happen to inflation. Is it going to get more ingrained, and how are things going to react to it? If the Fed sticks to its guns and it's not going to do much, I think economic activity is going to increase, inflationary pressures are going to persist, and that's a very fertile environment for the price of gold. Now, but it's ultimately a question of where investors think that real interest rates are going to be heading in. And the other investors, by the way, we historically see when we look at the folks we see investing in gold, are those that invest because of the diversification benefits of gold. And there, the correlation that in the long run to the S&P is near zero, but in recent months have been elevated. That actually in recent weeks has been declining. And so we might see more of those diversification investors come in. And then there are the short-term speculators that love to jump on a trend. And we haven't seen many of those. They tend to be more into the meme stocks right now. But overall, to me, it's about the risk of things happening in the markets. And that's the risk of the Fed not being on the ball, I think, is sufficiently high that I continue to like gold here.
Yeah, the Fed is inherently behind the curve. That's where the statement comes from. I just wanted to follow up on something you just mentioned, though, Axel. And that was when you're talking about real rates. A lot of people will use the TIPS and, you know, take that away, as the inflationary component and take that away from the 10-year. But there's also a lot of people that use the CPI. And when you look at those two things, there's a big disparity because the Fed has a heavy hand on the TIPS rates and they massage about 25% of that market. And it gives you a negative one reading. But if you look at the CPI numbers we get and then look at the 10-year, we're actually at negative four. So how do you balance out those two differing views of just how bad inflation is and just how negative the real rates are?
Well, ever since 2008 at the latest, the Fed has really taken away its means of getting feedback from the market by, as you point out, being so actively engaged in the market. When the Fed is buying all these securities, well, then you cannot read what the market says. I think that's very unhealthy. But it's kind of the best we get. There are various other inflation measures, but partially because of that Fed interference, they may also be distorted. All that said, the markets are forward-looking. And so it doesn't really matter what happened yesterday or today. It matters what will happen in due course. And so you pick your poison as to how you want to look at it. I reference the TIPS yield as an easy proxy. But no matter what you use, right, it's the relative movements that are really the ones that we like to look at. Are things getting better or worse with regard to real interest rates? And for that, even those distorted metrics are still of some use. And so it's that. And then part of it is, of course, yes, where do you think that the folks at the Fed are going to do things? Because one argument is, say, the 10-year yield is really a reflection of the next 10 years of what the Federal Reserve is going to do. And so there, it's obviously a lot of qualitative assessment of who you think is going to govern there. But it looks like the next 2.5 years or so, it's certainly going to be the same president, at least the same party that's going to dictate who the next Fed chair is going to be. And so that, I think, sets the tone, and trying to predict that much further out, I don't know. And the other way to look at it is, of course, what are the incentives in the system? And since we've told the fiscal authorities that they can spend whatever they want and it doesn't matter, and yet you have an incentive to debase the currency when you have too much debt, I don't think there's going to be too much change here. So yes, as imperfect as many of these market measures are these days, I think they do tell a similar story.
So Axel, I want to look at the metal sector, commodities broadly here, because look, it has been encouraging this week for the precious metals bugs that gold has recovered to right around 1800, silver's back in its range, and let's say 2350 as we are recording right now. But quite frankly, gold's been trading in that 1800 range really back to June, and silver's been in this about $8 range for about a year now. We look to some of the other metals, though, looking at base metals, and I'll use copper as an example here. Copper is up over 12% in 2 weeks. Oil is up at 7-year highs. So we are seeing more of these economic or more economy-based metals moving stronger. Oil, copper, base metals broadly, precious metals still stuck in the range. What's your takeaway from this environment here?
Well, that it's a mess. That's the short answer. Now, every commodity is a little different. I certainly don't encourage anybody to trade unless you really know what you're doing. If you look at crude, spot prices and the next delivery month is expensive, but if you go out a year, it gets cheaper, and so that suggests that the frackers will come online. If you look at some of the agricultural commodities, they're completely haywire. Some of it driven by the tariffs that the Chinese are buying stuff in the U.S. because the U.S. is refusing to buy things that are produced that potentially come from the wrong regions in China. Supply bottlenecks are everywhere, and on the metals, and then obviously not just on these ones, but on various ones out there. And so this is all a symptom of the times that we live in. It means that if you invest in these markets, you better have a strong stomach or you know what you're doing. Part of the reason I like gold is much simpler, right? There's much less industrial use. But I just structured CoinDeal an hour or two ago, and there's, again, tightness in various coins. Right? There are supply chain issues everywhere. And so that usually means volatility is coming up. And by the way, the best thing against high prices is that some people are pointing out high prices. And so when a particular commodity is very expensive, then people will start looking for substitutes. But yeah, it's a mess out there. And then by the way, just to continue rambling here, if you look at the U.S. at the ports, there are not enough truck drivers in some places to get things down. In the U.K., the ships are deciding not to dock there because there are not enough lorry drivers, truck drivers there, right? And so things are, there isn't enough labor around to move these goods, and people are looking for a plan B. And somebody pointed out to me they got a Halloween tree. Apparently some Christmas tree shipper was early because they were so afraid, and then they dumped it in the store. And so for Halloween, it puts a Christmas tree up there with some spooky things. So it's, everything is a bit messed up right now.
I guess that's where we can wrap it up, is that yes, everything is a bit messed up right there. And maybe in these markets too, it's not the time to be getting too aggressive because there are so many cross currents. And look, these markets are telling us Q4 is going to go down as one of the more volatile markets broadly than we have had over the last about 5 or 6 quarters. So let's get through this quarter and see maybe what trends start to develop in 2022. Axel, always great chatting with you, buddy. Thanks for taking some time on this weekend show. Again, Axel Merck, President and CIO, Merck Investments. Axel, have a great rest of your weekend.
My pleasure. You too.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.